Yeah,
no, you're doing the agenda constantly. Yeah. Really good job.
Thank you for joining us for our irregular but always well-attended and fascinating Myanmar Brown Bag seminars here at the Myanmar Research Centre. My name's Gerard McCarthy. I'm a doctoral student here in the Department of Political and Social Change. And I'm delighted to be able to introduce Mr. Yogh Montani from the International Committee of the Red Cross Myanmar. He's the head of the delegation there and comes to Myanmar with a very varied and fascinating history of engagements in Lebanon and Sierra Leone and a whole series of other contexts of conflict, political change, political conflict, and is going to be talking about today the balance between sort of short-term immediate response, humanitarian response, and balancing that with sort of in the context of intractable conflict, longer-term and medium-term engagement in humanitarian and development kind of work. So without further ado, thank you so much for joining us, and please do help yourselves to the sandwiches and the juice, which is outside. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you, and thank you very much for having me. It's a little bit daunting when I got the brief on who I was talking to. It's the Australian National University is home to one of the largest concentrations of Myanmar-Burma specialists in the world. So I hope I can live up to expectations. What you've got in front of you is yeah, a practitioner of humanitarian work. I've been in Myanmar now for 3.5 years, ending my assignment there in June. So while I believe that I'm starting to understand a few things of Myanmar, I think I have equally lots to learn from you as well on your views on Myanmar. What I thought I'd do is I will try to leave as much time as possible to the questions and answers. I think that way I can really talk to what you're interested in. But I'll give you a rough, a quick and dirty overview of how I read the situation and how the ICRC fits in that to start with. And my perspective obviously is going to be one really from a humanitarian point of view. So it is very directed in what we're interested in Myanmar. Myanmar is quite challenging and particular for a humanitarian organization. It is home to one of the longest non-international armed conflicts in the world within the Northeast. The ICRC actually counts 9 separate non-international armed conflicts in Kachin and Chan, conflicts which now have also developed into conflicts between armed groups, so not only the conflicts between armed groups and the Tatmadaw, the Myanmar army, and that are, excuse the term, almost complicated by a peace process that is very in a very difficult situation right now, but I come back to that in a bit. It is also one of the countries that is most affected by landmines and unexploded ordnance, so it's regularly listed as one of the top 3 in terms of yearly injuries due to mines and unexploded ordnance. It's a huge problem, not only directly for the people who are injured or killed by those mines, but also in terms of what it does to development, to livelihoods in the whole border areas. Rakhine, of course, this other situation of violence, as we call it, which is all equally long-standing and incredibly challenging. Now we've had the big outbreak of violence in 2012, which led to segregation, which in turn led really to a disruption of the social and economic ties that existed between the communities. They did exist prior to that, and they were very much interdependent. And so they have really affected the lives of all communities in Rakhine, not only the Muslim communities, but really also the Rakhine communities and the other minorities. And it's very difficult now to re-establish those links and to even to make it possible for, say, Muslims to work on a Rakhine farm or even trade is quite difficult to build up. I think, quite honestly, or my observations over my 3.5 years there is that the biggest progress on Rakhine was entirely due to time. We've seen since 2012 an erosion of the institutionalized segregation because of economic need. So you started to have those links created again. I'll give you one small example. When I arrived 3.5 years ago, I went from Sitwe to an IDP camp in Sitwe Township. And somewhere in the grey zone in the middle, there were half a dozen of little shops. And they were like the courageous traders that were trying to do something. If you do that same trip now, you have a 2 kilometer stretch of shops. So it's one big market that has evolved not because it was institutionally pushed to evolve, but really because economic need, social need drove it to evolve. Comes October last year with this new group that did attack police stations claims to fight also for the rights of the Muslim communities in Rakhine. And one of the big risks that I saw there is that we would see a setback of what time had achieved. I mean, organizations like the ICRC were trying with our programs to create links between the communities and to re-establish that trust. But I think our contribution was less than what time could do. And what those attacks in the north did probably set us back quite a bit. Luckily, it did not affect central Rakhine too much, and its effects are really mostly concentrated in northern Rakhine, north of Mongdo. Myanmar is also prone to natural disasters. I'm not going to go there too much, but they're in the unfortunate situation of kind of accumulating their internal political problems with the whole breadth of possible natural disasters that regularly hit. So all these, for us, from a humanitarian point of view, challenges that we need to be prepared for, that we need to be addressed. Of course, the ICRC specifically mandated to work in conflict, where we're going to be concentrating our work in Rakhine, Kachin, and Shan. The political background obviously plays into that as well, and I'm sure you've been following it. So the shift from a military regime, proper military regime, to an surprisingly reformist semi-civilian military regime under Thein Sein's administration. And now this shift to a more democratic administration, where you have a civilian government without oversight over the military, and essentially you have two powerhouses. The challenges for the civilian government are enormous. There is very little experience in Aung San Suu Kyi's team. She did not have many people around her with political experience. She works with a civil service that is not necessarily, that she's inherited from previous administrations, that is not necessarily aligned to her thinking, where their alliances lie with whoever provided them their job in the first place, which was not her. There is a clear difference in policies and approach between the civilian government and the military government, and very often they seem to work effectively against each other, although it's not the official position, of course, but in the action, what we can see is not very constructive either way. The government is being criticized for being short on policy, and that comes a bit all over the different departments, be it economic policy. So you have the big investor countries who and the private industry who deplores that there is no clear economic policy. There are policies on peace, but again, they differ between the military and the civilian government. So there's very little really to understand. And again, if I come back to how the ICRC works, where we want to be working in support of policies that would bring longer-term development. It's quite difficult to fit our work in there and to fit our programming into the government priorities if we don't fully understand what they are. I wrote down short on decision making. I think and we discussed it a bit over lunch. An extreme centralization of decision making into two poles. So it's as much on the military as on the civilian side, where very small decisions are really taken up to the very, very top. So it's two people deciding. Very difficult to run the country effectively if you only have two decision makers who don't even agree with each other where the country goes. And that slows down everything from our humanitarian access, but also from an economic point of view, where even big investment projects take half a year to be approved. From our perspective as well, a tension between a government priority on development and our understanding of the necessity for humanitarian work. Humanitarian work for this government is not clearly in their priorities. They really want development. And I think there is a lack of understanding, but I'll come back to that when I talk more about the ICRC, a lack of understanding of the importance of human, impartial, independent humanitarian work to accompany a peace process and to accompany those reforms. So you can't leave a population affected by conflict without assistance and protection, without impartial independent assistance and protection, while waiting for peace. This is not how it works. So the humanitarian consequence is certainly what we've seen over the past year is an intensification of conflict in the northeast. Rakhine, we've talked about it. So on both sides, the needs have actually increased quite considerably over the last year. And solutions are not really forthcoming. Again, we discussed it a bit over lunch with... We now have a glimpse, maybe, of the government starting to tackle some of the issues on Rakhine following the Kofi Annan interim reports, recommendations that indeed give the government some practical issues they can start to tackle. And I think they do have the internal documents, assessments, ideas that they need, but it does take a political decision that is still very difficult to put into practice. So for the time being, the fundamentals are not really addressed. I mean, we're still working on putting a plaster on where it bleeds, but not really addressing the underlying issues. The Northeast with the peace process. I think arguably we could say that the peace process has become more difficult under the new administration than it was under the Thein Sein administration. Again, I would put that down to a much more unified government structure, government military structure under the Thein Sein administration, rather than now approaches that may be quite contradictory. And I think the fact that conflict has increased in the Northeast, that there is a lack of clear leadership of the peace process on the civilian side, makes it very difficult for the armed groups to actually engage. There is very little opportunity for the armed groups to engage in the peace process. We're going from formal peace conference to formal peace conference with not very much substantive involvement of the armed groups in between. And so the buy-in and the trust is not really there. I think what the last 12 months have shown is that there is little power on the civilian side to control the level of conflict on the Tatmadaw side. So the level of trust of the armed groups is going down in terms of what is achievable in this peace process. On a humanitarian side, then, this has translated, unfortunately, also in much less access of populations affected by conflict to protection assistance and basic services, particularly in areas where non-state armed groups control some territory. So the ICRC used to be able to work in some of those territories and has no longer been able to do so in certain areas for the past several months. I have to address the Human Rights Council report, of course. That's one of the big white elephants in the room. It's a difficult one. In terms of timing, we have the Kofi Annan report that came out just days before the Human Rights Council resolution, and the approach of both is very different. The mandate is also different. Kofi Annan is an advisory commission, and as such, they can make recommendations that the government chooses or not to follow, and the recommendations were, I think, good. They might go a bit further in their final report in August, but they were things that the government can actively start to address, and they have actually shown willingness to address them with public support and some action already, some decisions already taken to start to implement some of the recommendations. The Human Rights Council resolution, as such, is of course a different type of instrument that is much more difficult for the government to accept, and for the government to accept also in terms of what the culture of a Myanmar government is, where sovereignty is extremely high on the list of political priorities and the understanding of how a country should be run, which is common in the ASEAN countries. So it's not particular to Myanmar, but it's particularly sensitive, of course, if then such a strong instrument as a fact-finding mission is imposed on Myanmar just after they've kind of shown their goodwill. So I think they feel hurt by the resolution. They feel misunderstood, and they don't quite see how to deal with that resolution. It will be indeed very interesting to see how they do react once the fact-finding mission is established to what they do. ICRC in all this, very briefly, been already longer than I thought I would be, sorry. So as I said, we really concentrate our work on the situations of conflict and other situations of violence. So our key operations are in Rakhine and Kachin and Shan. We come in with the whole breadth of what the ICRC can offer, and the ICRC is the humanitarian organization that kind of, in a way, we combine the type of work that you would find by combining all UN agencies into one. So we can really do a comprehensive response to humanitarian needs, because we have a capacity to do protection, health, relief, longer-term livelihood assistance, water sanitation, weapons contamination, so mine action, and we work with the military and the police on more law rules-based work. So we can really come in and look at the needs and approach them in a very comprehensive way where we choose to work. And so this is what we're doing both in Rakhine and in Kachin and Shan. The approaches are slightly different because the needs are slightly different, but the thinking behind it is the same, and particularly in a protracted situation like Myanmar, where you don't only have the immediate impact of the conflict, but you also have the cumulative effect of decades of conflict, displacement, disrupted livelihoods, lack of development. We need to be a bit more creative in those environments, and we need to try to address issues with a more longer term view. And so we're trying to get into all the programs that we have, unless we're really doing life-saving immediate interventions, a longer term thinking. And I'll give you just a couple of examples of what that looks like. In the small scale, it's when we address livelihoods of people, we're going to try to identify the people who are the most vulnerable within the community, and then build up with them an understanding of how they can sustain their own livelihood and support that. Very small individual projects. They cost somewhere between $100 and $400 for a family to establish a little business, be it pig raising, a little shop, etc. And then if there's a lot of pig raising, we'll train a veterinarian, a community veterinarian, whose livelihood this will become as well. So it's kind of small integrated projects, and wherever we can, we link those to efforts to re-establish trust between communities, which is particularly important in Rakhine. So we'll try to link up livelihood projects with trade projects in both communities, and to make sure that they work together. Or if the Muslim communities are supported to build fishing boats, well, the recipient is going to be the other community. And like we're trying to build up those relationships. Another approach is to tackle deforestation in areas where IDP populations are very concentrated, and where for the Muslim communities it can be quite dangerous to go and fetch wood outside the camp. We provide locally produced fuel sticks made from rice husk, something that is widely available locally, very easy, avoids deforestation, and avoids possible problems between the communities. The next step now is to try to help the Rakhine communities to produce rice husk fuel sticks, to create a trade between the communities to support each other. So it's small scale, if you want, but it tries to address the things a bit longer term, and it tries to create, to support, to stabilize the communities and create an environment where reconciliation and peace processes can happen. Bigger projects where we really enter into development thinking. I told you about the issues of mines, for instance. So we want to address the immediate issue of mine victims, people who have lost limbs due to mine incidents or unexploded ordnance. And there more than 10 years ago, we built a physical rehabilitation center that is being run by the Myanmar Red Cross Society in Pa'an, in Mon State. The MRCS runs it, we finance it, we give technical support. About 40 to 50% of the beneficiaries of the service users are mine victims. And we've now just, this time with the Ministry of Health, we've built two new centers, one in Kachin, one in Shan, within the general hospital, within the state hospitals, so that we're building together with the Ministry of Health again the capacity to address what is essentially a humanitarian issue, but again with a longer term development thinking behind it, and very close cooperation with the Ministry of Health. So this just to give you a few examples. We work, a last one maybe, when we visit prisons and labor camps in Myanmar. We do that to monitor conditions and treatment of detainees, but what we have is now real discussions with the Ministry of Home Affairs, with the prison department. They want to reform their prison system, and we're there to help them. So the first step now is really to support them in drafting a new prison law. The old one dates back to 1890-something, not quite up to date. And other things like, instead of us building toilets in prisons, we help them build up an engineering unit that can take care of the maintenance of their prison. So again, systematically in all our approaches, it's this longer term thinking that we need to implement to address protracted conflicts. I think I'll leave it at that because I've been much too long already, and we can continue and discuss what we really want to discuss.